So I will speak about derivation of mirror symmetry, and mostly, most of the time, I will be speaking on this first paper with Kumon Vafa. But if I have time, I might be able to speak a bit about this paper with Anton Kapustin. So the aim is to understand mirror symmetry as duality in 1 plus 1 dimensional supersymmetric quantum field theories. And let me first explain what do I mean by mirror symmetry in 1 plus 1 dimensional quantum field theories, supersymmetric field theories. So, as always, field theory has a Hilbert space of states, which I call H. And through the 2,2 supersymmetric quantum field theories is the thing I'm talking about today. And it has symmetry generators. H and P's are just time and space translation symmetry. And there are four supercharges, Q plus minus, Q bar plus minus. And plus and minus stands for the chirality, or left-handed or right-handedness in 1 plus 1 dimensions. And it can have central charge or internal symmetries called R symmetries, and which is usually called vector and axial U1 R symmetries. But these are always there, but these latter four are optional. And these generators obey the standard supersymmetric 2,2 supersymmetry algebra. These supercharges are all nilpotent, and Q plus and Q plus bar anticommutator is translation, left moving translation operator, and minuses are the same, similar. And F, Q plus, these supercharges are charged under this R symmetries, vector and R axial, and in a different way. And this supersymmetry algebra is invariant under the exchange of Q minus and Q minus bar, and vector and axial are R charges, and also corresponding central charges. And I call theory alpha and theory beta to be mirrored to each other when the two theories are equivalent. So there is a map from Hilbert space of one theory to the other, to the Hilbert space of the other. And under that isomorphism, the symmetry generators are exchanged under this exchange of Q minus and Q minus bar, and vector and axial are charges. And special operators in the theory are called chiral operators when it commutes with Q plus and Q plus bar and Q minus bar. And since this Q minus and Q minus bar are exchanged under mirror symmetry, it is mapped to the twisted chiral operator of the mirror, and vice versa. And for example, if you consider Calabi-Yau sigma models, complex structure deformation is coupled to chiral fields, and Kähler class deformation is coupled to twisted chiral fields. So these are exchanged under mirror symmetry. And there is also an operation called topological twisting, and that's done by using R symmetries. And if you use vector R symmetry, then vector U1 R symmetry, then you get a twist. And if you do it with axial U1 R symmetry, then you get B twist. And a twist is associated with quantum cohomology, or in other words, Gromov-Witten invariant. And B twist is associated with variation of Hodge structure, or just classical computation of period integral. And these two twists are again exchanged. So this problem is usually difficult, but this problem is solved using the classical techniques. And so by using mirror symmetry, you can get useful information on this difficult problem. And also this vector and axial R charges measures. So I'm just drawing the Hodge diamond, and supersymmetric ground states of this of the collabial sigma models are in one-to-one correspondence with harmonic forms. And so P, I just write 0-0 form and N form and 0 form, they're N forms. And these two, and R charges just measures which P and which Q. So R charges measures P and Q in this way. So since R axial and vector R charges are exchanged, this is flipped on the mirror symmetry. And in particular, Kähler class deformation is given by 1,1 form, and that's mapped to n minus 1,1 form, which corresponds to complex structure deformation. And there are many examples known. One is mirror symmetry between complex tori, and this is the case where this is completely understood. It is just a t-duality on half on middle dimensional torus. But there are more examples. For example, the example found by Green and Plesser, which is quintic, for example, quintic in CP4, and the 5 to the cube orbifold of the quintic in CP4, and some blow up of this. And this example has been generalized by Baturev using toric geometry. And these are the example where the target spaces are collabial. But there are also mirror symmetry for non-collabial sigma models. And for example, CPN minus 1 sigma model, target space is the case where the target space is CPN minus 1, is actually mirror to n equal to 2 Lambda Ginzburg model, whose superpotential is affine Todah type. And that has been observed at various levels. For example, Findlay and Intralligator checked that the two theories were, for n equal to 2 case, the two theories has the same VPS spectrum and same S matrix. So on-shell equivalence has been known. And also other people has studied, for example, topological twisting or coupling to topological gravity, and the two theories are observed to be equivalent. But except this torus case and a special case where the theories are exactly solvables, these examples has been just conjectures, and it would be very interesting to understand how these correspondences emerges. And this is the question I would like to answer in this talk. Is there a question so far? So before starting, so I need to explain something, which is the language I would like to use. And that is the superfield or on the superspace. So I'm talking about 2,2 supersymmetric field theories, So the theories are defined on 1 plus 1 dimensional Minkowski space, and as I said, there are symmetry generators. And I denote x0 as the time coordinate and x1 as the space coordinate. And there's a useful formulation of such supersymmetric field theories using superspace or superfields. So in addition to those ordinary coordinates of this space to 1 plus 1 dimensional space-time, I introduce fermionic coordinate, which I denote theta plus minus, theta bar plus minus, and consider fields on that superspace. And supercharges, q plus minus q and q bar plus minus, are acts on the fields as this kind of differential operators. And you can also have, you also have other differential operators that anti-commute with those supercharges. And you can characterize chiral fields or twisted chiral fields as the lowest component of superfield, called chiral superfields and twisted chiral superfields. And chiral superfields are the fields that are that are annihilated just by d plus bar, d minus bar, and twisted chiral superfields are those that are annihilated by d plus bar and d minus without bar. And it is also useful to introduce integration over the superspace, and that can be used to construct supersymmetric Lagrangian. And there are essentially three kinds of things I will use. One is the D term, which is integration over all four fermionic coordinates. And so integration of all four fermionic coordinates of any superfield is actually invariant under these supersymmetry transformations. And the other thing, another thing, is F term, which is the integration of two coordinates, theta plus and theta minus, without bars, of some chiral superfield or some holomorphic function of chiral superfields. And thus, this holomorphic function is called superpotential. And so for this to be supersymmetric, this integrand has to be chiral superfield. So that's important. And so other superfields cannot enter into the into this superpotential. Otherwise, this term is not supersymmetric. Another kind of term is the twisted F term, which is the integration over theta plus and theta bar minus. So again, if you have minus thing, then bar appears. So this is the difference between F term and twisted F term. And integrand has to be twisted chiral superfields, so other superfields cannot enter for this term to be supersymmetric. And so, for example, twisted chiral superfield cannot enter into F term, and chiral superfield cannot enter into twisted F term. So this is the language I'm going to use. Is there a question about this? So I will now move on to the derivation of the mirror symmetry. And the essential model I will need is called linear sigma model. This is a gauge theory in 1 plus 1 dimensions with supersymmetry. And let's just consider, for example, U1 gauge theory with n chiral superfield of charge 1 which I denote phi 1 to phi n. And since this is a gauge field, there's a field gauge potential V, which is a real superfield. And just like in ordinary case, derivative of gauge potential is a field strength. And I use this derivative, d plus bar d minus derivative of the real gauge potential, real gauge potential V. And this is denoted by sigma. And by this definition, this sigma is a twisted Carl superfield. This is annihilated by d plus bar and d minus. And Lagrangian of, so, and I will consider a system with this Lagrangian. So we have d term and twisted f term. And d term has contains quadratic term in phi's and quadratic term in sigma. And these are kinetic terms, essentially. Just like f wedge star f, we have field strength squared here. And these are actually kinetic terms for matter fields, phi i's. And this twisted f term contains linear term in sigma times some parameter, complex parameter t. And in terms of component fields, so these superfields are consisting of ordinary bosonic field and fermionic fields. And in terms of those ordinary component fields, this can be expressed as just ordinary kinetic terms for these charged fields, and also for gauge fields, and also potential term. And those parameter t, real part of t, which I denote r, appears in this potential term, and the imaginary part theta appears in this term, where V01 is the ordinary curvature of the gauge field. So so this is the theta term, theta angle term of the 1 plus 1 linear field theory. And I forgot to say this. This is, E is the gauge coupling constant, and in 1 plus 1 dimensions, it has mass dimension 1. And theory is super renormalizable. There is no divergence from gauge interaction. Well, yes. But this parameter R has to be actually renormalized. There's a divergence from this kind of interaction. So so one point function of phi I squared is actually logarithmically divergent. And to keep this term finite, I need to renormalize parameter R in a specific way. So so bare parameter is n times log of ultraviolet cutoff over some scale parameter lambda. Or if you change the scale, this parameter runs in this way. And there's this system has vector and axial. Classically, it has axial and vector R symmetry. Both R symmetries are preserved. But in the quantum theory, one of the R symmetries, which is you want axial R symmetries, an R symmetry is anomalous. And the effect is to shift the theta angle. So, so I just explained the basic facts on this gauge theory. And let's next look at this potential term. Let's go back to the classical theory. and let's just focus on this potential term.
Should there be an N in the shift before?
Oh, yes, thank you. Thank you, that's correct. Yes. To N, yes. So let's focus on the potential term, and this potential, so let's imagine that there's only a single field, phi, then the potential looks like wine bottle shaped. So when R is positive, it is like this, and because there's a phase, there is also this direction. And if you have many fields, it's shaped like a generalization of this picture. And the ground state, the classical ground state, is the potential minimizing configuration. And this is just given by the solution to this equation. So this being zero, and this is the equation. But we are talking about, we are considering U1 gauge theory, so you have to divide by U1 gauge group action. And so the vacuum manifold, the space of classical vacua, is just given by U1 quotient of this space, and this is nothing but Cp n minus 1. So this is what I described, this is Cp n minus 1, but there are also transverse modes, the modes that doesn't preserve this equation, doesn't satisfy this equation, the deformation away from this equation, and those modes has mass of order E times square root of R. So if you take the limit where E is sent to infinity, or if you look at energies, which is much, much smaller than E, then you're stuck with this vacuum manifold. And so essentially, from this gauge theory, you get nonlinear sigma model whose target space is Cp n minus 1. And this Cp n minus 1 sigma model is not finite, and parameters like metric has to be renormalized, and the size has to be renormalized, and size just shrinks toward lower energies. And the size of this is determined by this parameter, and this parameter also shrinks, becomes small, and as the energy scale mu is decreased. And the way the two things run are the same. So this gauge theory gives one way to define this Cp n minus 1 nonlinear sigma model. You can consider this gauge theory as one definition of Cp n minus 1 sigma model. And also, this theta term is just gives the B field term for this nonlinear sigma model. So this is the basic setup I'm going to use. And I just described this, the case where you get Cp n minus 1 as the target space, but you can actually have more general things by just considering more general gauge group and more general matter field of more general charges. So for example, well, let's just consider U1 to the K gauge group. So you have K field strength, sigma A, and N chiral superfields with various charges. And associated with each gauge group, there's a phi Lyapunov, well, R is called phi Lyapunov parameter and theta parameter. And if you take the gauge coupling to infinity, then you get nonlinear sigma model on the vacuum manifold. And the vacuum manifold is given by the similar equation modded out by this gauge group action. And this this space is a space called toric manifold. And if you consider this case, this gauge theory, you get toric manifold of n minus 1, n minus k dimensions. This space is this, as you can see, this is just a symplectic reduction associated with the U1 to the K group action on C to Cn by the charge this, by charge this, by this charge. So you can get nonlinear sigma model on general toric manifold this way. So from the gauge field again. And you can also consider adding gauge invariant superpotential for chiral superfield phis, and then you can get nonlinear sigma model on the submanifolds of toric manifold. But I will not discuss this in today's talk, perhaps. Now, so this is the model I will consider. But I use something called t-duality. I apply t-duality into this model. And let me explain what the t-duality is, if it is necessary. Let me just do this. So t-duality is, for example, I will consider t-duality between circle sigma model of radius r to circle sigma model of radius 1 of r. Let's prepare this system with this action, the system of one-form field, which I denote B, and a periodic scalar field psi of period 2 pi, and the action is just given by square of B, and also d psi wedge b. And if you integrate out first b, then you get constraint like, well, this is quadratic in b, so you can just solve for b, and this is the solution. And if you plug the result back into the action, you get this action. And you see that this is the action for sigma model on circle of period of radius r. Because psi is a periodic scalar field of period 2 pi, and we have r squared here, so it is a sigma model on a circle of radius r. But if you integrate out psi first, then you get this constraint from this second term. B is d of theta, and theta is another variable, which is again periodic of period 2 pi. And if you plug the result here, then you get this action, and this is the sigma model on a circle of radius 1 over r. So starting with the same system, you get two differently looking system, and they has to be equivalent. They have to be equivalent. So we have derived t-duality this way. And if you compare these two expressions for B, you get this relation. Star of d psi is equal to d of theta, essentially. And the left-hand side, this thing, measures the winding number around psi. And the right-hand side measures the momentum along theta, as momentum associated with the translation symmetry of theta. And so t-duality exchange in winding number and momentum, vice versa. And for example, if you have some configuration where some defect around which psi has one winding number, then that configuration has to be mapped in the t-dual side to insertion of some operator creating momentum, and this is this e to the I theta is such operator. And I will apply this to this gauge system. And so the gauge system has charged scalar field, complex scalar field. So phi has, that's the lowest component, complex scalar field, with the standard kinetic term like this, d mu phi, absolute value squared. And d mu is the covariant derivative. And let's just write phi as rho times e to the I psi, where rho is the psi is the periodic coordinate of period 2 pi. Then this kinetic term looks like this. And then let's just focus on this second term. And I will apply t duality on psi. So the difference from the previous case is that we have this v mu term, and we want to see what this presence, what this gauge field does under t duality. So as before, I prepared this system. The difference is that we just have plus v here, and if you integrate out v first, you get this piece, this original piece. But if you integrate out psi first, you again get this constraint. And if you plug the result back into here, you get the similar term. But from this V wedge B coupling, you get this term. And by partial integration, you get this term. So dual field theta couples to the gauge field as a kind of dynamical theta angle. FV is the gauge field strength, which I also wrote V01. So this is the difference. If you have this term, then under T duality, you get this dual field is coupling to the gauge field as a dynamical theta angle. So if you have, and you can also repeat the same thing in the supersymmetric case. Repeat the same thing on the superspace. And what it does is that to send, so I'm dualizing, t-dualizing along the phase of phi, or actually the phase of the superfield. And if you do that, what you get is not chiral superfield, but a twisted chiral superfield. And theta is the dual field. And rho square is just the original rho. This rho is the original rho, but theta is the dual field. And if phi is charged, as we have seen, then the dual field is not charged, but it is coupled as kind of dynamical theta angle. But in the supersymmetric case, it is coupled as dynamical phi Lyapunov theta term. So classically we had minus t times sigma, but after dualization you get sigma times y term in the twisted superpotential. Yes?
Can you clarify this a little bit? You're taking phi and you're really writing it as e to the x?
Phi.
You're taking the logarithm. You're taking one thing. You're taking the argument of the complex field.
That's right.
You're writing that as an exponential of some other field.
That's right.
And now this transformation is exact, approximate.
Oh. It's as long as rho is non-zero, it's exact. But as I will explain, rho can be zero somewhere on the field, on the space-time. So this is actually not exact. So this is the point. So we get this dualization. From the dualization, you get this system of twisted chiral superfield with this twisted superpotential. But this is actually not the whole story. Let's see.
Okay.
Yes. Sorry, there's at this level there's no distinction between whether this is supersymmetric or not. You can do the same thing for bosonic case. And this is what I just... Well, no, you can do the same thing. There's no nothing supersymmetry helps at this stage.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me just look at this change of variables or dualization in more detail. Since rho appears also in Y, there's also a relation between superfields. Real part of Y is actually this gauge invariant composite. So real part of this lowest component of Y is just phi absolute value squared. And the derivative of theta is just given by this essentially d psi plus other things. We also have fermions because we are dualizing along the phase, not only of the scalar field, also but also of the total superfields. And if you look at this first relation, maybe you find it very strange. Y is a field, but it's bounded from below, so its start it has to be zero or larger. So the field looks, the field configuration space for Y looks strange. There's an endpoint, and actually, this problem is not so serious. What cures is this renormalization. So as I explained, R naught, well, bare phi Leopolis parameter has to be renormalized like this. So it has UV cutoff dependence like this. Well, I have set n equal to 1 in this case, so we have just 1 times log. And to make, so what we have, what I have done in the previous transparency applies to the bare fields, and you get this coupling for the bare fields. But to make this thing finite, since this is running and this grows to infinity as you send UV cutoff to infinity, you have to also renormalize this field Y in this way. Then, so this is the renormalized field, and in terms of this renormalized field, for this renormalized field, this bound is sent to negative infinity. So this bound is gone, essentially. And the Kelly potential at this semi-classical analysis, well, essentially classical analysis, is just given by this. So it has dangerous place where Y naught is zero, then this is singular. But in terms of this renormalized field, this is smaller than this bare coupling R naught. So it is essentially flat Kelly potential, even though it tends to zero, which I will revisit later. So this problem is not so serious. And as I said, this system has classical U1 axial symmetry, but that's anomalous. And this anomalous U1 axial rotation, how it acts on this theta can be read actually from this OPE of the current wrong non-conserved axial current and derivative of theta, and it shifts theta, the dual field, and that shift actually reproduces this R anomaly that shifts the ordinary theta angle. So that this looks good, but as I said, it's not the whole story. So the important thing is that phi field can't have zero. And if it has a zero, then it can have winding number around that zero locus. So this argument of phi can have winding number. So if you have such a configuration, because we are doing t-duality, this configuration should be mapped in the dual side to the insertion of this kind of vertex operator, e to the I theta. And there is also a supersymmetric vortex configuration, which satisfies this kind of equation that's found by just looking at the condition where half of the supersymmetry to be preserved. And then this supersymmetric vortex configuration corresponds to insertion of this kind of superfield in the superpotential. So, or in other words, this supersymmetric vortex generates this term. So, and actually you can compute some correlation functions of fermions, fermionic fields, and check that this is indeed has to be generated. There are correlation functions that are vanishing without this, but by the presence of this vortex configuration, you know that correlation function has to be non-vanishing, and this shows that this term has to be generated. And also, you can also show that there's no other expression, there's no further correction to the superpotential. And this is where supersymmetry helps. So you can show that this is the exact superpotential of the dual theory. And that's the reason I can show that is that so the superpotential, as I explained, twisted superpotential, only twisted chiral superfield can enter in this twisted superpotential in a holomorphic way. And also there is some symmetry that has to be preserved. And so this, the symmetry I'm talking about is this wrong R symmetry, axial R symmetry. And this R symmetry is anomalous, but this can be considered as a symmetry if you shift the sphere angle, and the total superpotential has to be invariant under this such R symmetry. And also condition that the correction has to be preserved, has to be small in the region where Y is very large, T is very large, and sigma is small. So so the three things, holomorphy and the symmetry and asymptotic condition, just fixes the possible correction and to be absent. So this is the exact superpotential of the dual system. Yes? Oh, I haven't said anything about the Kaler potential. I have just said something, exact statement on the superpotential. I haven't specified yet what the Kaler potential is. And I said something about the Kaler potential. So it becomes flat, but it's just semi-classical. It's just from the semi-classical analysis, and there can be a correction to this. So I haven't specified, but at this high energy, we know that this Kaler potential should behave like this. But that's all we know. So this is, I think, the most important thing. We can exactly determine the twisted superpotential of the dual theory. And the dual theory has only Y and sigma field, so there is no ordinary superpotential. So this is the case for n equal to 1 with charge 1 theory. But of course you can repeat what I did for more general cases. So you want to the K gauge group with N fields with various charges, then each Carl superfield is mapped to twisted Carl superfield, and you get this twisted superpotential. This is the linear term in sigma, which you get from the dualization, and these exponential terms are the ones that's generated by this vortex instantons. And yeah. So this is the result. So I haven't specified the Keller potential, but this is the exact twisted superpotential of the dual theory. And the sigma model limit is, as I explained, the limit where this gauge coupling constant is taken to infinity. Then in this limit, this sigma field, gauge fields, becomes heavy, and it is appropriate to integrate it out. Then by this linear term, you get this constraint for this Y fields. Just by integrating out, sigma gives you this constraint, and we are left with those exponential terms. Sorry? This is just field strength, right? But as is well known, so this coupling is like this. So this, you can consider this as some theta angle term, and gauge field just generates. You can treat this gauge field as just ordinary auxiliary field. You can. If there's no charged field, yes. Phi's are gone, and this is just theta term, a Phi Leopoldus theta term, and Phi Leopoldus term just give you the real part of this to be generate a potential term, which is the real part of this squared, and gauge field is the imaginary part, generates just imaginary part squared term, and in the limit where gauge coupling is sent to infinity, those potential, this potential becomes steeper and steeper, and just get this constraint. Yes, linear sigma model, as I explained, is renormalizable. Yes, there is only, you only have to renormalize the Phi Leopoldus parameter. Is that the?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me just continue. So let me just summarize what we have seen. So we have started with gauge theory, and on the one hand, that theory flows to, reduces to nonlinear sigma model on the toric manifold of this type, and the B field is determined by tail angle. And by dualizing the gauge system, you get system of sigma and y's, and by integrating out sigmas, you get this constraint. So what you get is Landau-Ginzburg model on this space, the space of y's obeying this constraint with this superpotential. So what we have seen is that this toric sigma model is dual to this Landau-Ginzburg model. And so this is the derivation of the mirror symmetry between those models. So this is main part of the talk, and I will explain some more about it. But is there a question so far? I don't know. This is something I would like to know, but so dualization is, so if you have non-oblong group, it's not clear how to dualize those chiral superfields that's interchanged under this off-diagonal components of the gauge group. And
So long as it doesn't do something crazy, because I can always decide to work with y squared, and it looks like a very sick potential. So we need enough control over the Taylor term to know that it's non-singular, where it matters. And the evidence for this, the solid contact calculation, since you didn't show us the Taylor term, and you're assuming it's nice, what? And since we know that there was a problem because there was an origin in phi.
Yeah.
What's the evidence that the Taylor term for y is reasonable?
Well, so as I explained, one way to look at this generation of superpotential is to compute the two-point functions of some fermion. And you can do it in the standard way in the gauge system. And if you look at this, if you consider this system of y and sigma, you can also compute the same two-point function. And with this, plus this semi-classical Kähler potential reproduces that same result. Well, yes, that's right. Yes. Use what?
Mod y squared, just the standard norm y squared, sorry. This is
yes.
The normal.
Yeah. Well, yes, that's... yes. But we don't know what's the normalization is. Other questions? So let me just give you some example. Let's come back to this U1 gauge theory with n chiral superfields of charge 1. As I explained, it's just CPn-1 model. And the dual theory is this. So the constraint is sum over y's to be equal to t, because charge 1, 1, 1, 1. And the superpotential is just this. Or by solving yn in term using others, you get this superpotential without any constraint for y1 to yn-1. And this is the potential of affine total type. So what we have seen is the mirror symmetry between CPn-1 model and an-1 affine total theory with n equal to 2 supersymmetry. And there is something, well, let's just move on. Let's consider non-compact Calabrian manifold, which is more interesting from the string theory. For string theory, let's consider U1 gauge theory with charge 1, 1, minus 1, minus 1 matter fields, 4 matter fields with discharge. And you can see that this vacuum manifold of this system is total space of this vector bundle over P1, O minus 1 plus O minus 1 over P1. And this is a conifold. And the size of P1 is given by, determined by the Phi Leopold's parameter R. And we also have a theta angle term, theta parameter. So the parameter space is cylinder, R and theta. And there's a special point, t equals 0 point, where this this P1 shrinks to zero size, R equal to 0, where P1 shrinks to zero size, and then this target space is has a conifold singularity. But these two, by you can also turn on this as a gauge theory. If you turn on theta angle, then this singularity is resolved. So there's only one singularity where T is zero, R and theta is zero. Just by the same fact I explained, gauge field generates a potential term, theta squared, and that cures the problem. So this is the basic structure of the theory, and that large positive R and large negative R are smoothly connected. And there's only one singularity where this is t equal to 0 point. Now, this is just a gauge linear sigma model. You can apply R argument, and the mirror is one. This is the Landau-Ginzburg model with this constraint for the Y fields with this constraint, because the charge is 1, 1 minus 1 minus 1. The constraint is this. And the superpotential is the sum over e to the minus yi. Or in other words, you can solve this constraint and write the superpotential in this way. In terms of three fields, y naught, theta 1 and theta 2. Now, you can add this to this system, another system, which has superpotential, another system with variable u and v, with superpotential this, u times v. And this system has only a single vacuum with just potential is just so single massive vacuum. And in the infrared limit, this system has no degree of freedom. So adding this to this system, this UV system, doesn't change anything on this about this infrared limit of the system. And holomorphic measure of the new system is just this times du times dv. And by the simple change of variable like this, you can keep this, you can make this superpotential into this factorized form. So just UV, well, this term became this term. And it has a factorized form. And this measure becomes du, d small u, d small v, times e to the minus y naught. And so from this expression, it looks like not the y naught, but e to the y naught becomes the good variable. It looks like so. So just integrating over e to the y naught just give us a constraint like this being zero. And this is the question determining the deformed quantifold. So this is the mirror. This Landau-Ginzburg model is the mirror. But by this operation, you get a sigma model. Not the Landau-Ginzburg model, but sigma model on the deformed quantifold. And so, but of course, as you can see, that this operation is a little bit naive or sloppy, and only for, so just from this operation, you can only say that some holomorphic information are kept from here to here. So this is just a partial equivalence. This and this is the exact equivalence, but this and this is a partial equivalence. But at least you can see that relation between resolved quantifold and deformed quantifold. And if you set this t equal to 0 value, where you, in this side you get, you expect singularity, you also expect singularity. If you set t equal to 0, then this first four terms factorizes like this, and this is the quantifold singularity equation defining, showing us that there's a quantifold singularity. Yes.
So two questions related.
Yes.
One related to the previous one, one is introvert. One is the original nonlinear sigma model is not compact.
Yes.
So to have really light modes from the wave infinity, and the Landau-Ginzburg theory looks like I don't see them there.
We see there. There's either minus y naught. This is runaway potential. This is a like Liouville theory.
Okay, and then the other question is, now what do we do with the Taylor term on y? Because now we don't have running of r to fix the problem of the origin, because r doesn't run anymore.
Yeah, there's no running here. Oh, I see.
So
what do you
worry about the y kinetic term. So the origin of y is y, which is greater than your case.
We talked about it before.
I'm
Well, as I said, as maybe I have explained, there's an R symmetry, axial R rotation action on Ys, and those are just shifting Ys, irrespective of whether the total theory is conformal or not. And this R rotation is linked with this scale transformation. And that's, well, this is some kind of plausibility argument, but this suggests that you have to make also this shift or renormalization of Y field.
And you're saying each of the Ys normalizes
the Y? Yes, just in the same way. Yes. Some doesn't see it because common shift doesn't appear in the right hand side because charge 1, 1, minus 1, minus 1 sums up to 0. Say again? Gauge? Well, you have some hope that you can show it more rigorously. Okay. How many times do I have? When?
Well, let's try that at 4:10. Basically, towards the end. Basically, at the end.
At the. Oh, what? What?
You're basically at the end of.
I see. Okay. So there was something I would like to talk more about, the Cayley potential. Just explain briefly. So I didn't say anything about Cayley potential except that this semi-classical result. And let's just revisit this CPN or CP1 model. And as I said, it's mirror to affine total, A1 affine total, which is just sine Gordon system. And there's a U1 isometry, which we are actually used for the dualization. And that U1 isometry, or the momentum conservation associated with that, is mapped to winding number conservation, because the dual field is a cylinder variable, so there's a winding number which is conserved. But if you have round CP1, you have SU2 global symmetry, but it doesn't look like there's any SU2 on the right-hand side. And actually, some people, Kobayashi and Uematsu, studied this sine Gordon angle to 2 sine Gordon system. And if you consider this scalar potential, then actually there's a quantum SU2 symmetry, quantum deformed, Q deformed, and Q parameter depends on this K. And as K infinity limit, as we take the K infinity limit, Q becomes 1, and you get the exact ordinary SU2 global symmetry. And also the correspondence that this K has to be infinity has been also checked by interrogator Fenley and interrogator by measuring, by observing the equivalence matching of the scattering matrix. And we have also seen by the semi-classical argument that the KL potential is of this form, where R0 is something like log of UV cutoff. So this also suggests that this vanishes. So this also suggests that this exact mirror of the CP1, round CP1, is a sine Gordon model with in the limit where this K is sent to infinity. But we haven't shown this rigorously, of course. But the question is, you can also ask this the following question. So for finite K, what is the mirror? Is it CP1? And yes, it is CP1. And Fenley and Interrogator conjectured that it is CP1 model, although the metric is not the round one, but the sausage type shaped. And if you look at the RG flow, as you go to higher energy, you can find some model where this size is fixed, but this just grows, so that the Kähler class runs in the same way, but the metric runs in a different way. And can we show this? And the answer is that there is, I hope, an answer, a way to show this. And actually, there's a simpler model we can think about. It is just cut into half of this sausage, half of this sausage. And this is, if you cut the sausage into half, you get cigar. And the Fenley interrogator conjecture will lead to this cigar and Liouville correspondence, where in the sine Gordon side, the other term, e to the y term, vanishes. And there's, so the question is whether you can show this. And yes, and there is a way to show this, and it is again to use linear sigma model, but not with the ordinary charged scalar field, but some field which transforms inform homogeneously under gauge transformation. And by starting with this, you can actually show that this Cigar-Liouville correspondence, and also you can also specify what the infrared limit of this Cigar sigma model, and this is actually 2D black hole background. And well, so the Cigar side actually flows to some non-conformed field theory, which is super Cossett model with known central charge. And you can also make a rigorous argument that this gauge theory flows to this conformed field theory. And finding the mirror as finding the Liouville as the mirror is actually a straightforward generalization of this previous argument. And also Right. Yes. Right. Yes.
So there was this conjecture by some logic call.
Oh, yes.
That the 2D black hole was somehow equivalent to the sideways.
Yes.
Now, are you saying that you can derive that?
I'm deriving the supersymmetric version of that. Yeah, so it's just ordinary Liouville, supersymmetric Liouville theory. What they're talking about is theories without supersymmetry. No, it's not clear the relation of the two. Hopefully, some perturbation of this duality, which breaks the supersymmetry, gives you this Fatih Zamolodchkov duality. But it's not clear at this moment whether you can really do that. One thing I wanted to say is that this scalar potential, this quotient, this K here, naively it's not controllable, but in this case actually this is controllable, and this has to be the exact scalar potential of the dual theory, and that you can also show in this particular case. And of course this setup generalizes to more general linear sigma model with this open inhomogeneous fields, and you can obtain mirror symmetry between nonlinear sigma model on squashed type toric manifold and Landau-Ginzburg model on a toda type superpotential with finite scalar potential. And in some cases, you can see what the exact scalar potential is. So I stop here.